instead of when you did, would you raise them differently?
No, not really. I raised my sons and daughters. They had the same rules. My daughters were taught, I tried to teach them, tell them about sex. I also told my sons about it. And I worried as much when my sons took girls out as I did when my daughters were out. I feel that it's a half a dozen of one and six of the other, that my sons can do as much damage to somebody else's girls as it can go the other way. My daughters were taught to work. My sons were taught. They were instructed in housekeeping. They had to help. They had to make beds. They had to help with the laundry. They had to help with the shopping. They had to help with everything while we were by the years that we were by ourselves. And I have one son, my second son, who was he's not a good housekeeper, but he is a terrific cook, and he is very much in the raising of his own family. He has three girls and a son, and he is very close to all of his children, as close as their mother, and let's say he has done more mothering, really, than she has, though she's still very close to them and like that, and they both work, but they are both thoroughly involved with their children. But I think my son is closer to all of them than she is. And my oldest daughter was as involved in the Boy Scouts and the Cub Scouts, the Drum and Bugle Corps, and all the things that her kids were involved in. She and her husband were both totally involved in them. And she is a very good mechanic. Her wash machine goes haywire. She tips it over and tears it apart and fixes it. She tells her sons how to fix their car, and when they say, "That's not right," she goes out and shows them how. Her husband doesn't. He doesn't know how. Now, my husband is not a mechanic or anything like that. And like I say, my father taught me to. I use a hammer and screwdriver long before. But at the same time, my brothers were learning how. And my daughters, we all did things like that at home. And I was strict with my kids. And my oldest son told me after he left home, he said, "You were strict, but there was one thing wrong. You weren't strict enough." And my daughters have been, my oldest daughter has been strict with her children. My other daughter was very lenient with hers. I say lenient, not that they ever got in trouble or anything like that, but she was more permissive than I was. And she's got four good kids anyway. They're all good kids. I have 15 grandchildren, and none of them have ever given us any big worries.
You said earlier that you lost one of your sons.
My oldest son, 11 years ago. He had a genetic aneurysm. And it broke one night about 11 o'clock. And he was dead within the hour. He was the most vibrant, lively personality you ever heard or saw. He so hyper, so full of life. He would come to the house after he came back. He married a girl in New York. He was in the Marine Corps. And he married this little Italian girl from New York. And they moved back out here early in the 60s. And they brought three little boys with them. Yeah. Started their family right away. And they bought a house about three blocks from where we live. And two or three nights a week, he'd come bounding in, and he'd beat on the door with his fist, and then he'd open the door and holler, "Mom, where are you?" And come flying through the house, never stop. And he always knew he'd... And I have an old blue enamel pot lid that is so beat up, and the enamel is knocked off of it. I think the handle is even gone off of it. But all the time he was in the Marine Corps, he was in the Corps about 9 years. He'd come home on furlough or home on leave. He always knew where Mom lived because he'd always see that old blue pot lid still down in the cupboard. I couldn't throw it away. I absolutely cannot throw it out. And I still listen. I still, every now and then, I think I hear him hitting on the door. Only at that time I never kept the door locked. He could always come right on in. He just come bounding in. At that time, all of my family was here. We lived in Downey. I had one son lived there. My youngest daughter lived there. My older son, or second son, bought his home in Norwalk. My oldest daughter was the only one that left. They moved up to San Leandro. But we were all so close and so centralized. Our holidays were, oh, they were huge affairs. We used to bring the ping pong table in and set it up for dinner. And then when the grandchildren started coming along, we had another table across the other end of the house for the kids. There would be as many as, 35 to 40 of us for dinner. Because our holiday always included my husband's family and my brothers when they were here. I had one brother that lived here until he passed away 4 years ago. And his wife, sometimes his daughter and her husband. I mean, we never knew how many were coming. It was just a mob. It's quieted down this year, in the last two or three years.
Do you still see your family as often?
No. My second son moved back to Michigan, took his four kids and his wife back there 4 years ago. And then 3 years ago, my youngest daughter and her husband and two sons moved to Reno, went into business for themselves up there. And my oldest daughter still lives in San Leandro. And my oldest son's widow and his three children live in Lakewood. And the boys are all grown now, and the oldest one is married. The second one runs a fast food restaurant, or sometimes manager of a fast food restaurant in Lakewood somewhere. So I don't see much of them anymore. There's one granddaughter, is the only one I see very much of. She lives in Orange. And now everybody congregates at her house. They have an acre of ground out there. And a big swimming pool. And it's the perfect place for a family get-together. So that's where Christmas Eve is. Christmas Day, we're quiet. We stay at home. My brother and sister-in-law will be here from Michigan. And my mother. and another couple, this friend that I spoke of before. She and her husband and son will, I don't know if Mike will be along with them or not, but she and her husband will be with us because their kids are all gone now. So our group has dropped to from about anywhere from 35 to 40 down to about 10.
How does that feel to you?
Well, it's nice to have it quiet. I cannot stand the uproar, the hullabaloo of a gang of kids. My nerves don't, can't take it any. It had gotten to the point before that we had broken it up, where they all used to come for dinner. The kids started getting a little older. They wanted Christmas at their own houses, so they had Christmas at home and came to our house for dessert later in the afternoon. That was perfect. And until my son moved to Michigan and my daughter moved to Reno, they still did that. Well, now we don't, there aren't that many. Lynn has her kids. They like Christmas at home, too, so we, it's just the few of us adults, we have a quiet day, and maybe we ended up with a poker game or a game of blackjack or something like that, settle the evening, but otherwise our Christmases are quiet. Rob is the only one that comes home for Christmas, and he's never missed Christmas yet. Even though he lives away, he still comes home.
What was menopause like for you?
It was rough for me. I started having flashes early. And I would get very nervous and very upset. I took a lot of hormone shots. And then, of course, when Rob was born, I said I had a tubal ligation. Well, that didn't stop the periods at all. And I had periods until I was in my late 40s. And they started stretching out, but I would get so nervous and so uptight every month. And I took estrogen shots for a good 10 years. And then I changed doctors, and he didn't give me shots. He put me on Premarin. And I took Premarin in fact, I just stopped taking it in the last year or so. Because of it seemed like I was very high strung. I would get very uptight, and the Premarin kept me on kept my nerves leveled off. And in somewhere in the late 60s, after I had stopped having periods at all, I started hemorrhaging periodically. And I went in the hospital twice. I had DNCs. There was nothing wrong with the uterus that showed up at all. But every now and then I would just gush. And like I say, the doctor could find nothing wrong with my uterus. So we went on vacation this one year. We flew to New Orleans. And my husband had given me a beautiful white wool suit for Christmas. And I had my white suit on. And we got off the plane in New Orleans, and I was so sick. And I had hemorrhaged on the plane. And it was all over all through my clothes, my suit was. It was a good thing we got off the plane at 5 o'clock in the morning and there weren't many people in the airport. I was saturated. And I was so sick down there. And it would stop just that fast. I hemorrhaged like that off and on during the day for 3 days. And then it stopped and I never saw another spot. And when I got home from vacation, I went to the doctor and I told him. Well, I had a hysterectomy then. And I had, through the walls of the uterus, was diseased. What do they call it? Endometriitis. I could have gone on that way for years and they would never have found it without removal of the uterus. Well, after that, I didn't have the nervous problems or the flash, any flashes or anything like that, but I did keep on taking the Premarin. For the simple fact that my doctor said that it prevented some osteoporosis. Now, my grandmother was very humpback in her later years. And my father developed very round shoulders later on. And my doctor said, this does help. The hormones help prevent that. So just in the last year or so, I still have a bottle of them here, and I take them once in a while, but I don't have a prescription for them anymore. But it seemed like I had a long siege of menopause, a very long siege of it.
How is your health in general been? I know you have trouble with arthritis and you've had your hip.
Well, it seems like I've had a lot of health problems, but I had gallbladder surgery here a few years ago. And there again, I never had any attacks of gallbladder illness. When a doctor did my hysterectomy, he asked me later if I was ever sick to my stomach, if I ever had stomach problems. And I said, no, why? He said, well, when I was in there, I saw you had a well-developed gallbladder, full of stone. And I said, well, why didn't you take it out? He said, because your husband wasn't at the hospital to give me permission. But it never bothered me. I never had any problem. I ate, I drank, anything I wanted. I never had any indigestion, any problems that connected with the gallbladder, ever. And then this one year, it was after we moved here, like 70, 73, 74, about 1974. We came home from vacation, and we'd been home about a week. On Sunday afternoon, I'd gotten so hungry for a hamburger while we were in there. You can't buy a hamburger over there. They just don't make them like they do here. So I was cooking hamburgers Sunday afternoon, and Armin came out and he said, "You don't have to burn it." And I said, "I'm not burning anything." I was standing right beside the stove watching them. And he said, "Well, there's smoke in here," and the water heater had caught on fire. And I looked around and the smoke was just pouring in from the service porch. And the flames were coming out around the bottom of the water heater, going clear up to the ceiling. And we put that out. We didn't even bother to call the fire department. We just got buckets of water and threw on it and put it out ourselves. And then I waited 3 days for an insurance adjuster to come out. The house was all smoking. The kitchen, the back, and the service porch, and the back bathroom were just black with smoke. Even the drapes in the front room were smoked up. And I called, Armin called, and I called 4 days it was before the insurance adjuster got here. In the meantime, the girl at the insurance office said, "Go ahead, tear it out, send your drapes to the cleaners. They can pay for it when you get it done." And I went ahead and washed down the kitchen and the back porch. It had to be washed before it could be painted. And after I got through, I had a pain up here under my right shoulder. And it wasn't a muscle pain. It wasn't from washing walls. It was inside. And I went down to the doctor. I didn't have a doctor in this area yet. I was still going to Belfar to my other doctor. And I went down and I said, "Dr. Joe, I have a pain under my back, in my back, under my right shoulder blade." And we argued whether it would be in the flank, a kidney pain, or above that. And it wasn't kidney. I knew enough about it. It wasn't my kidneys. It wasn't my bladder. It wasn't anything like that. It was up too high. That was way up high. And I said, "Do you remember when you told me that I had a gallbladder full of stones?" And he said, "Yes." And I said, "Well, if I remember right, sometimes the gallbladder pain is in the back and not always in the front." He said, "Yes." He says, "Do you want to go in for a GI, upper GI?" And I said, "No, I don't. But I will go in and have the gallbladder out." And he took it out, and would you believe, there were 134 little black stones in it. I couldn't believe. And this friend of mine, while she was sitting there waiting for me, they brought up the cup they saved the stones for me. And she sat there and counted them. And it looked just like somebody had swept up a blacktop driveway with little black gravel stones. But that's all it was. But I never had a lot of illness. I had the usual childhood measles and chicken pox and whooping cough, and I had pink eye when the kids had pink eye, but outside of that, I was fairly healthy.
If you could describe in your own words what the experience at Douglas during the war years, what working at Douglas meant to you in terms of your life then and in terms of your life since, what would you say?
I went in at first, we were all hyped up. I mean, you were hyped up for the war effort. They wanted every able-bodied person that could to work. And it was mixed up emotionally with me because of having left my husband and wanting to work. I never missed a day's work. I would never stay out just to take a day off. Never. But I was the same way with school. I never missed a day of school if I could get there. And I was very, very conscientious about my work at Douglas. I worked to the best of my ability. And to the best of my endurance. I knew that a plane had to be built right because men's lives depended on it. And I felt that way all the time I worked at Douglas. Everything that we worked on in the area that I worked in, the work my people did, had to be done right because people's lives would depend on it. And any time you put a faulty part in a plane, I did not want the responsibility of somebody's life depending on a mistake that my people did. And I was very, very strict with my people. And we had a record of good work. And the last job I had there, we were building the vertical stabilizer on the plane, the big cargo master, the 133 cargo master. We built the vertical stabilizer, the nose part of it. In fact, my group built most of the sub-assemblies that went into it, all the small parts, the spars, every part of it. And if the vertical stabilizer and the elevator flaps and the rudder flaps and all those weren't right, the plane wouldn't fly right. And we knew that. And we had to have it done right, and it had to come up to specifications. And that was what I worked for. And it bothered me. It got along at the end. People were getting where they didn't really. I mean, sometimes they would act as if they didn't care whether the work was right or not. And that was one of the reasons I was ready to get out of aircraft, because I didn't want that responsibility any longer. It was getting to be a heavy load to carry.
Do you think your life would have been different, or how would it have been different if you hadn't worked at Douglas during the war?
I have no idea. I don't know what I would have done. I would have been working in some factory of some kind. But I don't think it would have changed me. Whatever I'd done, I'd have worked the same way. Because that's the way I was raised at home. You didn't do a sloppy job. If you didn't do it right, Dad sent you back to do it over again. And Mother did too, for that matter. I think working at Douglas is one of the good things in life. I had some very, very wonderful people that I worked with the last few years down there. I have a vase up in the cupboard on my 45th birthday. These kids brought, these people, they weren't kids, any of them, brought me in this vase and 45 roses. And it was against the rules of Douglas to bring in things like that. but they let them come through. And they had a big birthday cake for me, big party. And there were people came from all over the plant that had worked with me and for me and had been transferred or moved around. I had a real big party. And I still have the vase. Stands about that tall. They had all colors of roses. Pink, yellow, red, and white. It was a gorgeous bouquet. And when I went home that night, the guard asked me if I was going to get married. It was wonderful.